Welcome to episode 12 of the Putting Couch, brought to you by the Seymour Putter Company and Seymour's Tour Team. I'm Jim. I'm here with Cody Hale and Ted Galina. And today, wow, on episode 12, really been waiting to get this guy on. One of our very, very good friends, a longtime PGA Tour caddy, Damon Green. Damon, it is so awesome to have you on today. Thanks for taking the time.
Hey, thanks, guys. I appreciate y'all having me.
It's, oh, man.
Awesome to be on with you.
You know, Damon, it's, you know, our listeners will probably know, but Damon has been a longtime caddy for many, many years of Zach Johnson. Damon's on a short sabbatical from the PGA Tour, and I say it's going to be short because Damon and I had dinner last week, and while we were eating dinner, he had texts from at least three tour players saying, please come work for me. So, you know, Damon, it's you've been there, you've won major championships. I mean, there's very few caddies in the history of the PGA Tour that have had your resume, but how did you get into the business of being a caddy? I know you're a great player. You know, anytime that you were ever shown on TV, which was a lot, they always talked about your own playing skills. So how did it lead you to being a professional caddy?
Well, guys, I was a good player. I wasn't a great player, I guess, because I stayed on the mini tours for, let's say, 14 years. So, I mean, I won a lot of mini tour events, but having won 78 tournaments on the mini tours, I guess, is not that great because that means you weren't quite good enough to go to the next level.
78 more than I have.
Yeah. 78, that is unbelievable. I mean, And not all these are all over the world. I know that, but
they were mostly in the Florida area.
Okay, yeah,
that's part of the reason why I'm a good Florida player and I'm not a good world traveler. Maybe I don't know, but you know, I think it was my last year on the Nike Tour. I was on the Nike Tour from 95, 96. I missed my tour card by one shot, and then the tour school of 94. At Greenleaf, and not that I remember, but I can tell you exactly. ended up missing about a 2.5-3 footer, and actually thought I, even if I missed, I was still in, and I kind of misjudged the number, and I walked around the corner, and one of the old pros said, "How'd you do?" And I said, "Well, I shot this number," and he says, "Well," he put his head down. He goes, "I think you got a chance." And then I knew right then that I had missed. And, sure enough, I missed by one shot, and it was just
gut wrenching.
It was. I just like cried all the way home because I was living in Orlando, so I just
rode
back and forth at the time. And, it was just a tearful ride home there, and.
Because that wasn't your first time, probably. That probably wasn't the first time, huh? So, I mean, just so much had led up to that, I would assume, huh?
So I played on the Nike Tour in 95 and went back to tour school that following year down at Bear Lakes. And I wasn't putting too well. And so I actually switched to cross-handed putting that week. And I shot like 68, 67, 69, and I was in fourth place after three rounds, just putting pretty good. That was before I knew anything about Seymour putters, you know.
Oh, yeah, this is mid-90s. Yeah, they weren't around yet.
Yeah, and so the last 3 days, my putting just left me, and I had 9 holes to go, and I was one off the number or one on the number or right on it, I didn't know, but I knew that I was going for broke. I did not want to miss by one shot again because that was, you know, I'd rather miss by 100 than one, right?
Right.
So I just pretty much went for every shot and just putted like Ray Charles and come in. I ended up missing by 4, but I had full status on the Nike Tour back then and played that year not very great, probably 100th on the money list, something like that. Went back and I played 2 more years of mini tour golf down the Golden Bear Tour, sponsoring myself, putting the $15,500 entry on my credit card, and the pressure of having to pay an exorbitant amount of interest on $15,500 and play golf was just a lot that I could handle. And I decided to give it up, and I was going to go into the insurance business. But my brother-in-law and a buddy of mine, Jimmy Green, called and said, I'd like to come caddy for me this week in Mobile. If I finish in the top five, I get my tour card. And I said, well, sure. I'm just like studying the state.
Is that Jimmy Green that played at Auburn?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
He and I were good buds. We played the mini tours together, and we had played the Nike tour together. So we traveled together and all that. And I said, sure, you know, I'm just sitting here taking the state insurance tests, and I can, you know, spare a week. So I drove up to Mobile, and we finished third. And, you know, he was all excited. And when all the hubla ended, he called me up and asked me if I want to just go caddy for him on tour. And I sat thinking about it, and I'm like, yeah, that's probably be a lot more fun than selling insurance. And I had caddied some in like junior college on the ladies tour when they had an event in Orlando. I caddied for Patty Rizzo, got my feet wet that way. And then I'd caddied for Scott Hoke while I was still playing in like the Orlando tournaments, because I'd played a lot of golf with him at Bay Hill, which okay. I was a member. And, you know, all the members used to talk about how good of a putter I was back then or something. And I could read the Bermuda grass greens. And so I caddied for him in four or five events throughout my playing career, and, you know, really learned a lot. That's actually where I learned all of my course management. I had no idea, even though I was winning lots of mini tour events, that there was a way to go about tackling a course and breaking down a course. And I was just always go for broke, go for the pin, because the mini tours, if you didn't shoot low, you really weren't getting that much money. So I didn't realize tour golf was a totally different animal. So I learned so much from him, and, you know, I took a lot of that, what I learned from him, and, you know, tried to help Zach out when he first, you know, as a rookie. And
so Scott knew that you were kind of doing this at the highest level right. for the first time. So right. is he walking you through kind of how he goes about his strategy and trying to say, you know, because he obviously then wants you thinking the same way as him. Is that how that worked?
Right. We wanted to be on the same wavelength, and he wanted to help me with my career also. So kind of, you know, it helped both of us out. But he had learned most of his course management skills from Calvin Peak, which is, you know, he said Calvin was a short hitter, and he had to be very precise on where, what side of the fairway, not hit a fairway, what side of the fairway Calvin wanted to be on. That's how
wow. cool
it was. Yeah. If it was a right pin, he's shooting on the left half of the fairway.
Wow.
And Scott said he could even pick out a line of the mower stripe and pretty much hit it. That's how good Calvin was. That's pretty interesting.
Oh, man.
But so
you learned a lot with that.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned Zach. So how did you and Zach even, when did you first encounter Zach? Yeah, where were you guys?
I guess I should go back to when I caddied for Jimmy that first year. And I remember our first tournament was in Hawaii. Joy and I flew out there and had a big time with him. And he holed his bunker shot on the 18th hole for an eagle, the last round. And he made like, I don't know, $90,000, and I made $7,500 my first tournament. So I was like hooked after that. And
catching a 5-pound bass.
That's like winning another mini tour event there.
Well, way more. We didn't play for that much money. So it was, you know, I think it got in my blood there, and, you know, we didn't keep our card that year, so we were at the finals tour school, and I got a phone call from Scott Hope, and he was looking for a caddy, wanted to know if I wanted to go to work for him. And I said, Scott, I'm at the finals tour school with Jimmy, I can't, you know, really talk about it right now. So he said, you know, think it over, and if Jimmy doesn't get his card or whatever, you know, I'd love to have you come to work for me. And so I told Jimmy about it. He said, man, you got to go to that. He said, you don't need to be messing around with me. He's, you know, he's a human ATM machine. And as long as you don't forget the code, you're going to be in good shape. I ended up going to work for him, and I worked for him for 4 years and 2 weeks. And in the meantime, I'd played some little gambling games with Zach in the Orlando area. And, you know, we had our little money games, and me and my partner would beat him one day, and him and his partner would beat us one day. And, you know, we just developed a sort of a friendship. And after Zach had gone on the Nike, I guess the web.com tour then, and he finished number one on the money list, I saw him in a club repair shop in the Orlando area, and said, man, good playing. That's the way to go. And I said, if you need a good caddy, be sure to let me know. I've got some friends that are looking, and I think it's very important for a rookie to have an experienced caddy. And he looks at me and he goes, you're number one on my list.
Wow.
Like, what? I caddy for Scott Hoke, man. You know, he's a human ATM machine. You know? And he's like, and I'm thinking, well, this guy can't even beat me and my shoe salesman caddy. Buddy of mine, he wants me to leave Scott Hoke and come caddy for him. I'm like, he's got some nerve. So I went back to the house and told Joy, and we just kind of went over his stats that year, and he was like number one in every category. And I'm like, holy cow, this guy must have really figured out how to play golf. And, you know, I decided that Scott was getting kind of older, and I knew that he'd probably be going on the senior tour, and I thought that I needed to stay on the PGA tour where the money was. And, you know, I decided to take a chance, and despite what Joy said, you heard that, Joy? he didn't want me to do it, but I said, no. I didn't want to miss out on an opportunity if this guy was as great as his record was on the web.com. So I decided to do it.
And then how long did it take you guys to start playing well?
Well, we won Atlanta that first year.
There you go.
So,
what was that everybody, like?
Everybody thought I was stupid, you know, for leaving.
Yeah.
A lot
of
players, caddies, and
interesting.
They told me I was smarter than a brain surgeon after that. So.
So they hadn't seen, I mean, I guess at the time, it, you know, the web probably wasn't on TV as much, and maybe they really didn't, they hadn't done the deep dive that you did. So you get to Atlanta, his first year on tour. That was only what, a top one of the first five or so events that he played, or was it 10 events? How many did it take?
I think it was maybe 10.
12, okay.
I think it maybe was in March. Usually it was right before late March, right before Augusta or something. I can't remember. It was a long time ago.
Did you see it coming? I mean, how did that very first win on the PGA Tour for, you know, for both of you really, tell us what you remember about that. That had to be pretty special.
Oh yeah, it was, you know, it justified me leaving and going to this kid. And, you know, he was just a really gritty performer. You know, it's like he had something to prove, like he had a chip on his shoulder, you know. And I tell people it's sort of like he's like a little chihuahua or something. You know, he's not powerful or strong, but when he gets the hold of your pant leg, he just will not let go till he takes some hide or something. And he just had a great belief in himself. He was a religious man, and he, you know, I think he thought that God wanted him to perform well so he could like testify and, you know, tell people about, you know, God giving him the ability to play this game and kind of do a witness every time he won. He seemed to do that.
Wow.
And I think that really just freed him up and to, you know, if the Lord's pulling for you, it's pretty powerful stuff. So that's, and you know, I remember that previously, I think he had four spotted in that tournament, and he came to the last hole. If he made a par or something, he top 10 when he was on the Hooters Tour to go to the next PGA Tour event.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And he got to that hole and he hit it in the water and he made like triple or three putted after that or something. So he went from like top 10 to like, you know, 20th. but he made a good check, and I think that gave him a lot of confidence. And I think he really loved the course, and that, you know, that had a lot to do with us winning there.
Damon, we hear a lot on TV the player caddy relationship, and we always really hear it from the player's point of view. We never hear it from the caddy's point of view, and I assume it's more, you know, like a maybe a husband and wife type relationship. I mean, with Scott, with Zach, with other players, what type of relationship is that? I imagine you don't want to be the yes guy, but then again, you might have to walk a fine line. So is there, and there's a trust factor at the same time. So how does that work between player caddy? I imagine it's built after, you know, I assume it's built after a number of years, but when you first start out, I mean, is there set of ground rules that you guys talk about, or what? How does that work out?
Well, I kind of got that straight early on, Ted. I remember we were playing in the Honda Classic. It was probably our fourth event, however many events it takes to get to the Florida Swing. And Zach called me in to read a putt, and I said, I think it's left edge. And he hit the putt, and I don't know, I think he pulled it or something, but he thought it broke left. And so he walked off the green, and he goes, he's hot as can be, you know, madder than a wet hen. He looked at me and says, if I ever ask you to read another putt, don't. Like that. I'm like, huh, okay. I done left Scott Hope to come work for you, and you're like, you're like smashing me right now. So I let him hit his tee shot. The next time we're walking down the fairway, I said, Zach, I got to tell you something. If you ask me to read a putt, I'm going to tell you what I see. It might be wrong, it might be right, but I'm going to tell you what I see. I'm not going to tell you what you want to hear. And if you want somebody that's going to tell you what you want to hear, there's a whole parking lot full of caddies that would love to carry your bag. Your choice. And so we walked up, he walked up ahead. About, I don't know, 10 seconds later, he turned around, he goes, you're right, I apologize. And from that point on, we never had that many issues at all. I mean, we had our, you know, our odd and end blow ups every now and then, but you know, I think the caddy has got to not be afraid of being fired. A lot of caddies will say yes to their player because they want to keep their job, and I think the great caddies will say, no, that's not the right club, we need to hit this one. So that's one of the biggest things, as far as I've seen over the years, of the great caddies.
Hey, it's Cody here. I don't know if you remember this, but the first time you and I met was when we were playing, I think it was 2008, maybe the winter. We were playing in a Hooters Tour Winter Series event at Harmony Preserve there outside of Orlando. Yeah. So I know what kind of player you are. Obviously, we played. I think we both made the cut, had a pretty good week. I think that was the first cut I had made as a professional as well. So anyway.
You know who else was there that week?
Famous who was?
You remember who else was there that week that was a play in that series that it was Keegan Bradley played?
That you're exactly right.
How about
Keegan that? Bradley was major champion. Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. He and I played some college against each other, but you're exactly right. He had a pretty good year that year too, and he got better quick. You know, I mean, it was amazing what he's accomplished now. But that's pretty cool. A lot of good players that come off that little winter series tour down there. But obviously, knowing that you're a great player, what is it? I mean, how important is it for a player to have a caddy who's had that experience and you know, from winning, you know, at a high level, but knowing, you know, how to react and how to talk to somebody when you're under the gun and when they're under pressure situations?
Yeah, Cody, I understand what you're saying. Well, I personally think it's huge, but you know, there's a lot of caddies that didn't play. Now, I think players are different. Some players want somebody that's a comedian that's going to keep them loose. And maybe they do their yardages and the caddy's just there to, you know, just kind of make sure they're loose and having fun. And then you have players that want the caddy to do all the yardages, and all they do is you tell them how far it is, what the wind is doing, what club they need to hit. And then like Zach and I, we both did yardages. We discussed every shot. We talked about the club. So I think there's sort of like three types of players. And you've got to feel out what kind of player he is, you know, when you're first meeting, and, you know, try to accommodate, you know, what he needs, because we're there to serve them basically. And we want them to succeed. That makes us make more money. And, you know, the ones that don't do that don't last very long. So, you know, I won a lot of tournaments, so I know what the body's feeling coming down the stretch. I know, you know, maybe you're pumped up a little more. Maybe, you know, if you hit a bad shot, you may have to wait, you know, 4 or 5 minutes, let him cool down a little before you say something. So you just got to, you know, learn your player. And I think that it was a great asset, me being a decent player in my caddy career. So
you are listening to the Putting Couch podcast, brought to you by the Seymour Putter Company. And we're speaking with Damon Green, who has put together one of the great, not just playing resumes with 78 wins on the mini tours, but he and Zach Johnson, 12 PGA Tour wins, 2 major championships, over $40 million in earnings. Some of the greatest moments also in Ryder and President's Cup history. And Damon, you know, Zach is one of the great winners of his era on the PGA Tour. There are other guys out there that have as many top tens and have a lot of money won. But when it comes down to it, winning 12 times in the Tiger Woods era, they are about the same age.
Yeah, forget that.
So 12 wins in the Tiger Woods era and 2 major championships is unbelievable. Nobody else within a 5-year window of Tiger other than Zach has anything close to that resume. And what it comes down to is that closing the deal. I mean, to get those 12 wins, because as you know, going, if you've got a shot at the lead at a win on Sunday, I mean, there's another 10 to 15 guys that also have a shot. So you can be playing great golf, but how many times have we seen guys just fade on Sunday, fade on Sunday, fade on Sunday? Zach, you and Zach did not do that. You actually put the hammer down. You did it at the Masters. You did it at the British Open. You did it in just about every one of your PGA Tour wins. You had to go play great on Sunday. And a lot of times it was putt unbelievable on that back nine. Make putts. Don't be afraid to make putts. And so, you know, that's what defined you guys out there. And I think what you're talking about, your background, you know the pressure, and you know that, hey, to win, you can't hold back. You have to put it down. And so you can't be afraid. Tell us a little bit more about closing out some tournaments. I mean, and what you as a caddy, what are you talking about? What's the tension, you know, watching a guy win a PGA Tour event is incredible, but you're right there.
Yeah. Are you aware of the scoreboard? Are you the scoreboard watcher? Do you mention anything that to him, or are you just sort of, you know?
Yeah. I was always the scoreboard watcher, and, one of the great stories, I think, was at the Masters when we won in 07. You know, I'll never forget. It was cold, windy, and the Masters was just really playing tough. And that week we had set up a game plan to we know we're not going to be able to get to these par fives. So Zach wanted to sit down, and you pretty much know where the pins are on every green. And so we would put, say, the 13th hole, we'd have an A pin front left, a B pin front right, a C pin back right, D pin back left, and we'd throw a couple more in the middle there, close to the race streak. And we just sat there, and I'm like, okay, Zach, how far do you want from the A pin? And he'd say, we need 70 yards of that pin. What do you want to the back left pin? He said, why don't we hit as far down as we can, right at Race Creek, close to that next tee box, and chip across the green. So we just spent a lot of time putting that information in my yardage book, and just really had a good strategy that week for that. And I think that obviously we played them, 11 under?
11 under, yeah, par fives.
16 par fives, that's pretty dang good.
Yeah.
So that strategy worked out pretty good, and I'll never forget Saturday after I ran. It was a really, really windy, hard day. I think maybe we shot like middle to high 70s that day. And he was so mad on the putting green, he actually slipped out a cuss word on the putting green. And it was very uncharacteristic of him because he knew he had a chance to win the Masters and he thought he'd blown it that day. His driver was letting him down. So we putted for a while and then we went to the range and he went to the locker and grabbed a different driver. And we hit balls with that driver and decided to switch for the last day. I mean, how crazy is that? Major championship, you're switching clubs. And he drove it just magnificent the last day. But I know we were playing with Von Taylor, one of his good buddies, and another former Seymour putter.
Yep.
Forever. On the last day, so Zach felt very comfortable with that pairing. And we had birdied like 2 and 3 to maybe tie the lead or something. And we get to the fourth hole, and the wind's howling into us. It's like 230 something yards. We had hit 3 wood to the back left pin, and he just peered this 3 wood right at it. I'll never forget. And it went like in the back, just past the pin. And we're walking down there, and he goes, "Hey, D," he said, "today," he says, "for this, this day," I said, "I want you to keep me in the present. Don't let me get ahead of myself." So for some reason, something hit me to say, "Zach, okay, I don't want you looking at a leaderboard the rest of the day. I'll tell you what you need to know.
Wow.
Let's focus on our game plan that we've set up and let's just go play golf." So, you know, we're playing around and we get to the 13th hole and we could have gone for the green with like a 4-iron. And I said, "Zach, let's just lay up. We've got our game plan. There's no reason to mess with this shot. It's a hard shot. The odds of us hitting the green are not very high." I said, "You're wedging it really good." I said, let's just lay up." And he goes, "All right." So he like punched down there with a 7-iron. And I guess I've heard that Peter Costas just reamed us for not going for the par 5 that day. And we got up there and we wedged it to like 2 feet and made birdie. You know, I just said, "There you go, Peter. How you like that, birdie?"
And then you made an unbelievable bending birdie putt on 14. That was just crazy. Yeah, about 4 feet of break. Oh, my goodness.
The 7-iron shot we had in there was even better because, you know, you've only got an area the size of a coffee table to land it to get it in that section and to get it past the hole. And, he knocked that putt in.
Oh.
And as we're going to the 15th tee, people are going, "Come on, Zach, you can do it. You can do it." So I know he's got to be thinking that something's good's happening right now.
Yeah.
And I didn't say anything until we hit a good drive, laid it up, and now we've got this 60 to 70 yard shot over that pond off a downhill lie, which is one of the hardest shots in the world. And I'm shaking in my boots as we're hitting this thing. And he hits a pretty decent shot. And it goes like 15 feet past the pin on the back fringe. And he two-putted. And as soon as we two-putted, we hear this huge roar on 13. And there's only, you know, you kind of get to know the roars at Augusta if you've been there many times. You know when it's a birdie roar. You know when it's an eagle roar. And then you know when it's a Tiger Woods eagle roar.
Yeah.
And Tiger was on the prowl, you know.
Yeah, he was playing behind you. I mean, it was right. Hey, you beat Tiger Woods in his prime. He was right there behind you. And, oh, my goodness. Well, then you go to 16.
Well,
and,
no, just like
you did, yeah. Oh, my goodness.
So we walk over to the side of the green and Zach goes, "Is there anything I need to know?" And I said, "Well, Zach, yeah, it's probably time for you to know something." I said, "You're doing pretty good." I said, "You're 2 shots up right now." I said, "But Tiger just made eagle. And he's Tiger Woods. So we have really got to just focus on what we're doing right now. Let's just, you know, hunker down and stick to our game plan." And then we get to the next tee, and it was just a perfect 6-iron for Zach. I mean, it was he can hit it as hard as he wants. The further he hit it, it just keep going up the hill and come down. If he hit it normal, it's still going to come down. And he hit this shot. It was maybe the best shot I've ever seen him hit in my life. And I had picked that bag up, and I had walked so fast. I don't know how I did it. And I think I'd gotten to those pine trees about 100 yards at the fairway before that ball started rolling, because I knew it was perfect. And he made that putt.
So are you, when you're looking at that putt, are you just kind of standing back right now? Are you still, you guys both still have your books? You're looking at which way it break. Do you talk about that putt? I mean, what happens there?
Well, we at Augusta, I didn't have a whole lot of input there because it's Dick Grass Greens. He's one of the best Dick Grass putters in the world. That's what he grew up on.
Yep.
And matter of fact, I'll never forget this little story, but the first time we went to Augusta, we hired a local caddy because we thought they might have some insight on the greens, right? So that guy carried the bag, and I walked around and was writing notes during the course. During the And after about the sixth hole of Zach reading the greens better than the local caddy, the local caddy says, "Zach, you got them greens." So basically, we had spent the money to hire this guy, and Zach already knew the breaks, you know.
Wow.
Just from his, you know, he read putts with his feet mostly.
Yeah. Yeah.
By his feet, better than what this guy had been caddying there for 50 years. So, you know, the first time I ever putted on bent grass greens, I was knocking them off the green because I'm used to slow Bermuda grass greens. And I go to a college tournament in Oklahoma, and I'm putting, I putted like four balls off the green. So I'm I got a lot better at it. Just hanging out with Zach.
Oh, man.
Learning about it. But anyway.
So he slams his birdie in on 16.
Yeah. And then we go to 17. The pin's like middle, and we were on the front fringe. And if you're putting that way, it's you're putting towards Ray's Creek, so it's really fast. And he putted it by about 8 foot, and he missed the dang thing coming back. So now we're bogey. Now we're up by two going to 18, and we're standing on the tee. And he goes, "Anything I need to know now?" I'm like, "I think you can look at the scoreboard now, Zach. You're two up with one hole to go." So he stared off at the scoreboard over to the left of 17 and hit a good drive there. And we kind of got lucky. We pushed our six iron just a hair, and it was like, I don't know, 6 inches from going in that bunker. But it stayed up. And that bunker shot's much tougher because it rolls probably 10 yards down to the middle of the bunker. And we're standing there looking at this chip shot. And he goes, "You like a 60? I'm like, "No, no, 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 no. We don't want anything with spin. We're going to hit this little 54 and just get it on the green. Let the gravity take its course." And he said, "All right." So he pulled this 54 out, chipped it up there to about a foot, tapped it in. You know, it was just exciting. And he got a little choked up after we signed our card. I said, "Zach, I know you're excited and you're, you know, you're happy, but we've got Tiger Woods behind us. We don't have time to think we've got this thing won yet.
Okay.
We need to start preparing for a playoff."
Pretty good.
Yeah, man, I had some good thoughts that week. I don't know what.
Hey, Damon, your text is going to be lighting up again. I mean, this is Damon Green. He's been our guest on the Putting Couch. It's just been incredible. And Damon, I know we'd love to have you back on kind of a regular basis if that's okay. And you know, we want to go through, you know, more about your background and your great career and some of your playing experiences and you know, that learning about that 2007 Masters victory, which was just one of the greats of all time, really. I mean, in the toughest conditions, I think, that the Masters have been played in over 50 years, a short hitter comes up and through great strategy, great putting, and just great clutch performances. Six birdies on Sunday, you know, I mean, to, again, in brutal conditions, a 69 with six birdies on Sunday to win the Masters. And that's what it took. There are a lot of great guys up there that were not able to do that. So you got the horse in the barn, and that led to you know, just completely taking Zach's career to the next level, where you really were always in the conversation as best players in the world, and the best, I think, the best player caddy team in the world.
Definitely.
No question about that. So,
well, thank you. That's nice of you.
It's a thrill to have you on, Damon. And I know that, you know, hopefully you're enjoying the sabbatical. It's not going to take long because, you know, players live to win majors, and you've been a part of it. And that was a great story. We'll get more next time. Is that all right?
Sure. I got plenty of stories.
Fantastic. Damon Green on the putting couch with the Seymour Putter Company. And until next time, that'll wrap up episode 12. Thanks, Damon.
Thanks, guys.
We appreciate you joining us. If you haven't subscribed to the show, make sure you do wherever you're listening. Be sure to leave a rating and review, because that's how we get the Putting Couch podcast content in front of more people. Also, take a screenshot and share it on social media and tag us at Seymour Putters or hashtag Team Seymour.